Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Ever since Republicans took command of the North Carolina General Assembly in 2011, they've made cementing complete control of the state's public university system a top priority. From purging Democrats from what had long been a bipartisan board of governors and preventing Governor Roy Cooper from having any role in system oversight, to upending decades of precedent when it comes to the process of selecting campus chancellors and other high-profile hires, GOP legislative leaders have made it clear that when it comes to higher education in our state, they're running the show. And earlier this week, I got a chance to discuss this situation, some of its key components, and how it seems all but certain to continue in the new year with a reporter who's followed it closely for several years, NC Policy Watch investigative reporter Joe Killian.
Well, Joe Killian, Happy New Year. Welcome back to News and Views.
Happy New Year. Glad to be here.
Another eventful year in higher education, which is one of the beats that you've really devoted yourself to at NC Policy Watch in 2022. It remains an area of controversy, and we suppose it will remain the case in 2023. I wonder if there are any issues that you covered in higher education in 2022 that figure to be at the top of the agenda again in the coming year.
Well, you know, since I started working for Policy Watch and since I started paying more attention to the UNC system, one of the things that I've noticed that I made a sort of theme of a recent year in review piece was the way in which the Republican majority in the legislature and their appointees on the UNC Board of Governors, and to some extent the Board of Trustees, boards of trustees at various schools, have just sort of abandoned norms. You know, I mean, this is something we've seen in national politics as well, of course, but there are laws and there are regulations and there are things on the books, and then there are sort of norms, things that nobody writes down because this is the way that things have operated for often for very good reason for a very long time, and no one thought that they needed to write them down. And those are some things that we really have seen abandoned in the last few years. I mean, there are ways in which this group of people has actually changed the rules. So, for instance, Policy Watch covered quite a bit the way in which chancellors are searched for was changed so that the head of the UNC system, president of the UNC system, currently Peter Hans, can just choose a finalist in any search, even if they were not people who were part of the search or were part of the running and whatever their qualifications, and just make them an instant finalist. And then you have to wonder, well, if they're an instant finalist and he handpicked them and he's going to choose the person who's going to get the job, you know, that's just basically
have the rest of the process.
Yeah. Why is there a process? And so even some of the members of the Board of Governors were uncomfortable and made their discomfort known with that. But we saw it taken sort of a step further in the last few months because the UNC system is also in charge of UNC TV, what used to be called UNC TV and now is PBS North Carolina, powered by the UNC system. You know, for 30 plus years, anytime that they need to choose a leader for that group, they do a national search and they get the best person they can possibly get. And there's competition and they choose somebody, and that has worked, you know, reasonably well for them. And Peter Hans this time around just decided to forego any sort of search. And he chose his buddy, David Crabtree, who's a longtime former WRAL anchor. And when asked why they wouldn't do a search, he said, well, because it's not written down anywhere we have to do that. That was just a norm. It was just a thing that we did. And, you know, many people, including people within PBS, including people who are legislative oversight folks, said, well, right, yeah, but it's a norm for a reason, because you want competition. You want to get the best possible person. To which Peter Hans in the UNC system just said, yeah, but we just had a good feeling, like this fit, and why even look? And it reminded me of that scene from When Harry Met Sally, where the old couple says, you know, I knew we were in love. I knew, like, you know about a good melon. You know, it's a little bit like that. And they really did not feel like they needed to justify it any further. One of the main problems with this is that PBS North Carolina and many organizations across the UNC system or that fall under that domain have been trying to diversify. You know, they've been trying to hire people who are unlike the people who have always run these things. Well, a white man has always run this thing, and they just chose another white man who is, you know, sort of an elder statesman of this area, just sort of people picking people they know who are much like them and much like the people who have always been chosen, you know, is sort of part of the problem. And there are lots of people who want to address that and, or at the very least, make it so that there is some competitive system whereby these people are chosen and they have to compete. And, you know, the point was made that there are lots of people who either were looking to apply or were asking how to apply who had run organizations exactly like this, sometimes for decades. And you'd think that that sort of experience would make a difference. And it would if there was any sort of competitive process, but there wasn't. So that becoming more and more the case is something that we are continuing to look into. And, you know, we have another of these weird situations where they're looking for a chancellor for UNC Asheville. The chancellor there is stepping down, stepped down this week, January 1st. And the person who is currently the interim chancellor is somebody whose previous work was working for the UNC system and justifying things that that they did that came under criticism from the American Association of University Professors and various other staff and faculty groups by saying, I think that the university system is right in everything that it's doing. That's the person who is put into a place where we're there to pick it up when the chancellor stepped down. And should they apply, I think they have an excellent chance of being chosen.
And one other area in which we saw this change that the UNC system has undergone and sort of this intentional political shift to the right, there were times in which even Republican appointed members of the UNC board, their hair on the back of their necks got up and said, whoa, wait a minute, what are we doing here? One of these was the plan to move the UNC system headquarters from Chapel Hill to Raleigh to be, I guess, arguably closer to this, to the seat of government. That's a big shift in something that had long been established in Chapel Hill.
Well, yeah, and it's also a shift. I mean, you and I have been around and been paying attention long enough to know that 10 or 12 years ago, if you'd asked Republicans in North Carolina, would you like to see the university system run from Raleigh? They would be like, God, no, Raleigh, where government is, government's the problem. We don't need our university system tied more closely to lawmakers, that we need to get it out from under, But now Republicans have been in charge for a decade. And for at least the last 5 or 6 years, there's been this conversation. Why don't we just move this whole thing to Raleigh? Why don't we get it out of godforsaken Chapel Hill, where all these commies and hippies live, and, get it to some place where we're in charge. But each time that this is brought up, there are a couple of problems. And even the, conservative appointees of the UNC Board of Governors bring them up, which is that it is extraordinarily expensive to move something like an entire system, UNC system, to a different place. And particularly in the environment that we're in now with property values and rents and, things like that, it's enormously expensive. And also, that doesn't seem to be much of an advantage. It's not A, that far a move from Chapel Hill to Raleigh, but also, it's sort of more symbolic than anything else. And so some of the most conservative members of the Board of Governors, including Art Pope, were like, this doesn't make any sense. They asked us to look at it. We looked at it. And what we said was, by they, I mean, the legislature asked the UNC Board of Governors to look at this change. And what they came back with was, we don't think it's a good idea. We don't think it's a good idea financially. It's not a good look. It doesn't make any sense. Here's why it wouldn't be good. And they were like, yeah, you're doing it anyway. So they literally passed a law where they just did it by legislative fiat. They just said, here's what you're doing. And this really irked some of the members of the Board of Governors, because they're like, we're appointed here for a reason. We're not supposed to be a rubber stamp. We're here to look at this stuff and genuinely decide what we think. And you've asked us to do that. We've told you. And you essentially said, it doesn't matter. We're making the decision. And so that just sort of like drops any sort of pretense that it's not just the legislature running the system. And that's been a controversy.
We're talking with NC Policy Watch investigative reporter Joe Killian about the UNC system, the year in higher education, some of the things that are to come. Governor Cooper obviously has been paying attention to the fact that the Republican General Assembly has sort of seized complete control of the UNC system. And he's trying to push back with a bit of a bipartisan pushback, where he's appointed a new commission to review some of these issues. Doesn't seem to be getting much of a positive response from the Republican leadership at the General Assembly, but tell us about what Cooper's trying to do and some of the people he's put in place.
Yeah, it's interesting because over the course of the last few years, more and more people and more groups have been weighing in on what the sort of problem is with the UNC system. And we saw it with the American Association of University Professors, who released this almost 40-page report on going back years and years. And we've seen it with various faculty groups and student groups and alumni groups. And finally, it's gotten to the point where the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, who's a UNC alum himself, said, we really need to take a look at this and see like how this is running and why, and figure out how it's supposed to run. So he appointed two co-chairs, a Republican and a Democrat, both of whom have been former presidents of the UNC system, Tom Ross and Margaret Spellings. and in putting together a committee to investigate this and have a report. There are a couple of problems with this. One is that, as you say, before the committee had done any work, before its members have even been named, Republican legislative leaders have completely dismissed it and said, we're not interested in any of this, what you have to say. We don't think it's legitimate. We think it's political. We don't care if there's a prominent Republican who worked in the Bush administration and who we chose to be the head of the UNC system at one time involved. We just find it illegitimate. And the other thing is the governor doesn't have any power over the UNC system. I mean, even the small amount of power that he had to name some appointments to trustees or whatever were stripped by Republicans almost as soon as he came into office. So any change is going to happen at the legislative level. And from talking to people who are involved in this, they have their eyes open about that. But it's sort of like the January 6th committee, right? I mean, the hope is that they want to unveil some things. They want to make the public aware of some things in there. And the hope is that this will lead to public sentiment that will ultimately lead to some changes. And there is actually a precedent for this. I mean, it's a small precedent and, you know, almost laughably small. But for years, the UNC Board of Governors has sort of withered under the criticism that they purged all the Democrats from the UNC Board of Governors. And for years, it was just registered Republicans and people who were not affiliated, but had pretty strong ties to conservative groups or individuals or organizations who were on that UNC Board of Governors. And after years of saying, well, we don't see why that's a problem. There can be plenty of diversity within a group that's entirely Republican and people who are unaffiliated. They did, in fact, ultimately appoint one Democrat. Now, that Democrat, Joel Ford, is a Democrat who lost his seat in the legislature primarily for voting with Republicans so often and saying that he might join the Republican Party. So he, you know, he lost his Democratic primary, but he's a Democrat nonetheless. And they did respond to what was essentially repeated and continued public pressure over that issue and, you know, being made to feel shame over it. But so who knows what may happen, but we'll be very interested to see and continue to report on that committee and its work.
We're coming to the end of our time with Joe Killian, investigative reporter for NC Policy Watch, sort of discussing the year in higher education and what's to come in 2023. One area of, I guess, encouraging development and growth is the role and status of HBCUs in North Carolina. It seems there's been a bit of a renaissance when it comes to HBCUs, including North Carolina A&T in your hometown of Greensboro. That seems to be one area in which North Carolina is getting more national attention and maybe a cause for optimism exists.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think that part of it is a cultural mood right now, wherein sort of the racial reckoning and racial conversations we've been having in the country for the last at least 5 or 6 years has led to a lot of people being interested in going to an HBCU because of what HBCUs represent. As Nicole Hannah-Jones, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who ultimately didn't end up working for the UNC system because of problems related to this, called, you know, a place made for us. And they feel that a lot of the things that you might face dealing with a state school system at a very large university that is predominantly or a majority white, you wouldn't deal with at an HBCU. And some of that is true. We've talked a lot about and reported a lot about the way in which conservative appointees and legislators have been sort of trying to put their thumb on the scale in terms of what is taught and what is acceptable and sort of moral panic over critical race theory and things like that. Well, while that was happening in the broader UNC system, the HBCUs really stepped up and did speaker series on issues related to critical race theory and are highlighting moments of America and North Carolina's racial history that are uncomfortable and need to be talked about and understood. As a result of that, while some of the biggest universities in the system have been declining in enrollment, we've seen a boom, particularly at A&T, which is the largest HBCU in the country and North Carolina's most prominent HBCU, but also at some of the smaller ones. And an attendant problem is that there is a cap on how many out-of-state students any UNC school can take. And there has been such interest, particularly from the HBCUs, that a couple of them, A&T included, have run afoul of that cap, enrolling more out-of-state students than they're allowed, and they've been subsequently fined. The UNC system has raised that cap a couple of times now over the course of the last 2-3 years, and is now actually raising that cap for other universities as well, because they feel that they might be able to attract more students from out of state and shore up those enrollment numbers.
Well, it appears one thing we can safely assume is that there will be lots more discussion in the higher education world in 2023 on the policy front, both at the General Assembly and at the boards, various boards of governors and trustees. So we're so grateful and appreciative that you'll be there to watch it. People can stay tuned by following Joe's stories on NC Policy Watch. Joe, thanks a lot. Stay safe. Have a great 2023. Talk to you soon.
You too. Thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Remember, you can check us out online and subscribe for free to some of our state's best news coverage and political commentary at ncpolicywatch.com. You can also listen to all of our interviews and commentaries on Apple Podcasts. For producer Clayton Henkel, it's Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.